Good morning and welcome to another broadcast of The Bible Speaks. My name is Warren King, an evangelist with the Downtown Church of Christ in Rogers, Arkansas, and I will be your host for today's program. The Bible Speaks is part of the evangelistic effort of the Downtown Church, which meets at the corner of 2nd and Chestnut Streets in Rogers. The Downtown Church meets on Sunday mornings for Bible classes at 9:30, and we have Bible classes for all ages. Our regular assemblies on Sundays are at 10:30 on Sunday mornings and at 5 o'clock on Sunday evenings, and we would encourage you to come and visit with us any time that you can. You know, many examples are in the Bible where God's people are stuck between a rock and a hard place, unable to find any way out of a bad situation. And at those times when His people turned to Him, God was able to do what they could not do. Few illustrations do more to make this point than when the newly freed Israelites were trapped between the Red Sea and the pursuing Egyptian army. They had nowhere to turn. Their situation looked completely hopeless, and that's when Moses told the people of God to stand still. A few years ago, I was sick for almost 2 months with COVID pneumonia, and I spent more than a week in a COVID ICU. It was during that difficult time that I put this sermon together, and by the grace of God was able to preach it when I returned to the pulpit. And so I invite you to join us this morning for a sermon I entitled, Stand Still. So have you ever been caught between that proverbial rock and a hard place? You know, the kind that can sometimes overwhelm you in life. When you get to a situation in life where you're desperate, and there's really nowhere to turn. You turn this way, there's a wall. If you turn this way, there's a wall. And it seems like there's nowhere else you can turn. And that sometimes comes up in the life of a child of God. It can be overwhelming. It can challenge your faith. It can even destroy your faith as a child of God if you don't handle it right. It can happen, for example, in the realm of finances. And it might be because of some financial mistakes that you've made in the past, or it might be no particular fault of your own. I mean, let's face it, our country is $30 trillion in debt or something close to that. Financial distress is on the horizon. I don't know if it's near or if it's far. Financial distress can happen to any of us at any time. Don't know what to do, nothing I can do to fix it. It might be that it's a health situation that you run into where your health is taking a turn for the worse and the doctor may give you a terminal diagnosis. Or he might say something along the lines of, well, you know, this could kill you. I don't know. It's going to be close. We could pull you out, but we really don't know. And at that point in time, you realize just how powerless you are in your life. And you may have eaten well for years and you may have done all the exercise thing for years. But suddenly, here you are in a health situation that could take your life, and you realize it's out of your control, and there's nothing you're able to do about it. Or it might be a relationship. You know, it takes two to dance, they say, and so maybe there's a relationship that you really want, or maybe a relationship you're already in. Maybe you're married, a husband and wife thing. But then suddenly the other person doesn't want that relationship anymore. And now here you are again between the rock and the hard place. Suddenly you find yourself in a situation where there's nothing you can do. You are powerless to fix the situation. As one philosopher said, having done our utmost, we can do no more. And sometimes when you've done your utmost, you're still between the rock and the hard place. There's nothing more you can do. Well, that's exactly the situation that the people of Israel were in Exodus chapter 14. And I know you know the backstory. The children of Israel had been in captivity in Egypt for 400 years. It's the only life they had known. But then God sends Moses. You got the 10 plagues. Remember that, kids? Wednesday nights, you're studying through those 10 plagues. You got those memorized by now, I hope. And so God sends the 10 plagues. And finally, with that last plague, the death of the firstborn, Pharaoh says, okay, I'll let you go. And so he does. And the children of Israel walk away in freedom. And they finally come to the shores of the Red Sea. And about that time, Pharaoh decides, you know what, that was a dumb thing I did. I'm going to go recapture them and bring them back. And so he gets his army together, the chariots, the foot soldiers, and he follows after the Israelites. We're going to take up the story here in Exodus chapter 14 and in verse 10. The record says, when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. They were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord. And then they said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is it not the word that we told you while we were still back there and said, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to have served the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness. They were between the rock and the hard place. You got the Red Sea on one side. You got the army of the Egyptians on the other side. And there's nowhere for them to go. Nothing they can do. And that's when Moses gives his famous command in verse 13. He says, do not be afraid, but stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. Stand still. Would have been a very difficult thing for the children of Israel to do on that occasion. How can we just stand still? We got to do something. What are you going to do? Again, there's a reason it's called between the rock and the hard place, because there's nowhere to go. There's nothing you can do. And so Moses tells them to stand still. The question that we'd like to pose in this lesson is exactly what does that mean? What was Moses telling the children of Israel when he told them to stand still? And maybe more importantly, what are the lessons that you and I as Christians today can draw from what Moses tells the children of Israel when he tells them to stand still? First of all, let's make it clear that there are several things he was not telling them. When he says to stand still, he didn't say, why don't you guys just continue to stand there and just keep on murmuring and complaining? Because that's what they were doing. They were complaining. You guys just stand there and you just keep right on complaining. Let me tell you, standing still as a child of God doesn't mean you can complain. Nothing I can do, so I'll just complain. That's exactly what they did. They cried out unto the Lord, that's true. But it was not a cry of faith, I can tell you that for a fact, because in the very next sentence, they cried out unto the Lord, but what did they do? They complained to Moses. Why have you brought us out here to do what? To die in the wilderness. They may have cried out unto the Lord, but it was not a cry of faith. They did not at all believe that God was going to be able to save them. The same God who had just brought them out of Egypt, the same God who had just brought 10 plagues upon the people of Egypt, they didn't believe that he had the power to get them out of this tight spot. And so they complained. That was in fact the beginning of a 40-year habit that the children of Israel had of complaining. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, the Apostle Paul is writing to Christians. And he uses this period of time, the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, to draw several lessons for you and for me as Christians. And he says, don't be like they were. Don't be sexually immoral like they were. Don't test God like they did. Do not complain like they did. And so when Moses tells the children of Israel to stand still, he was not saying it's okay to complain. Just sit there and gripe. That's not what it means for us to stand still. Standing still also does not mean do nothing. It might sound that way. Stand still, do nothing, twiddle your thumb. Is that what he was telling them? He was not telling them that it's okay to be lazy. Again, sit back, guys. Sit down. Enjoy the show. That sounds a lot like the one talent man in Matthew chapter 25, and many of you would be familiar with that parable. Remember, there was a master who was going to go out of town for a while, and he left with one of his servants, he left five talents. With one of his servants, he left two talents. And with one of his servants, he left one talent. And so, you know, he comes back after a while, and the five-talent man said, "Hey, I've earned you five more talents." And he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant." The two-talent man, he says to the master, he says, "Hey, I've earned you two talents more." And the master says, "Great job. Well done, good and faithful servant." And then we come to the one-talent man. And you remember what he did, right? As the master challenges the one-talent man, the one-talent man pushes back. He says, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." He says, "I knew you were a hard man. I knew you were a guy who reaped where you never scattered. And so what I did," let's take up in verse 25. He said, "I was afraid. And so I went and I hid your talent in the ground. And now look, there you have it. It's yours." And notice the answer of the Lord to him in verse 26. He called him a wicked and lazy servant. What did the one talent man do? Bottom line, he didn't do anything. He would have interpreted the words of Moses to mean, "I'll just stay here and do nothing. Stand still. Okay, I can do that." But that's not what the master had in mind. He says, "You're lazy." No, that's not what it means to stand still. It's kind of like the church at Laodicea, the lukewarm church. They were neither hot nor cold. They weren't on fire for the Lord. It's not like they were persecuting Christians either. They just didn't much care. They were lukewarm. Pretty much a do-nothing church. And the Lord told them, he says, "Because you are lukewarm, I will vomit you out of my mouth." God has never been impressed with lazy, do-nothing people. And so I know when Moses tells the people of Israel to stand still, that's not what he's telling them to do. And so what is he telling them? It's interesting to read some other translations here, because many of your modern translations will translate this, "stand firm." Well, that's a big difference, isn't it? That doesn't really communicate the same thing as "stand still." It's also, by the way, a good translation of the Hebrew word here, to stand firm. Young's literal translation simply says, "Station yourselves." Now, that's a military phrase, isn't it? That conjures up images of a fight. It conjures up images of "stand your ground. Don't you run away. Don't you cut and run. Don't you give up here. You stand your ground." And that's exactly what Moses was telling the children of Israel to do. You stand firm. Don't you move. The idea of standing still could be interpreted different ways. It could be like a parent getting on to a restless child. "Be still." Or it could even be a statement of fear. You have a couple of people walking through the dark woods at night, and one of them says, "Stand still, I hear something." Almost of a fear kind of a thing. Stand firm doesn't convey fear at all. It conveys courage. It conveys strength. What it says is, you stand your ground, people. Stand your ground. And then he goes on to tell them in Exodus chapter 14, the very next verse, did not read this a while ago, but in verse 14, "The Lord," Moses says, "will fight for you. You shall hold your peace." The Lord will fight for you. And you say, "Well, preacher, what does that have to do with me today?" I turn your attention over to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 3. Because in Hebrews chapter 3, first of all, what is the book of Hebrews about? It's a letter written to a group of Christians who are doing what? They're getting ready to cut and run. Exactly what they're getting ready to do. These are Jewish Christians who had been Christians for decades, as near as we can tell. And they were getting ready to give up. To give up on Christ. To give up on Christianity. And to go back to where they had come from. Very much like the Israelites in the time of Moses. Let's go back to where we came from. The Hebrew brethren were getting ready to go back from where they came. In their case, to go back to Judaism. You and I, as Christians today, can be easily tempted to go back to where we came from. You may have come out of denominationalism, or you may have come out of the world. and had no religious background at all. And it might be easy at times, and especially when you're between the rock and the hard place, right? To say, I'm done. I'm done with this. And so you cut and run and you go back to where you came from. Hebrews chapter 3, a lot of passages in the book of Hebrews that we could read. But look at Hebrews chapter 3 and beginning in verse 12. Where the writer says, "Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in doing what? In departing from the living God." He says it is a faith issue. It's a trust in God issue. But he says if you give up on this thing, you will have departed from God. You will have cut and run. In verse 13, "You should exhort one another daily what is called a day." That's the admonition to all of us who are Christians, to encourage one another on a constant basis, on a regular basis. Let's encourage one another in our common faith, lest what? Lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Again, a hard heart. For, verse 14, "We have become partakers of Christ if we hold to the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end." We need to be steadfast. We need to hold on to the confidence of our hope. And do not cut and run. You stand your ground. You stand firm, which is exactly what Moses was telling the people of Israel. Not only to be steadfast, but also to trust in God. Again, these things are very interrelated. We need to trust God. The reason we can stand firm is because we do trust God. We do believe that God is able to help us. And this is not just a lip service kind of a faith, if that could even be called faith. That's kind of what the Israelites had, right? They cried out unto Jehovah, but they immediately started complaining and murmuring about their situation. That was not faith. That's just lip service. It was not trust. It was just saying a name. We are encouraged in a number of passages to pray with full trust and assurance. James chapter 1 and in verse 6 would be one case in point. I know James is writing here about wisdom, but hey, have you ever been there? Have you ever thought, man, I sure wish I had greater wisdom. I sure wish I knew more about God's will for me. I wish I knew more how to apply the will of God in my everyday life. That's called wisdom. And James tells us, if any of us lack wisdom, let us ask in faith. Again, pray to God, but we have to ask in faith without doubting anything. The one who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. And that's just one case in point. Here's a legitimate thing for us to pray for. James says, pray for it. But don't you doubt. Don't you wonder or question whether God is able to grant you this wisdom. He is fully capable. He is fully able to do this, but you've got to trust Him in this thing. Which again is exactly what Moses was telling the people when he told them to stand firm. What he was saying is, trust God. God's got this, but you've got to trust Him. In Matthew chapter 18, here's an interesting passage. In Matthew chapter 18, we have the parable of the unforgiving servant. And I understand what the whole point of this parable is. It's the last part of the parable that really makes the point. So this servant is forgiven all kinds of things, and he will not forgive his fellow servant a little thing. And Jesus says, don't be like that guy. Your Father will not forgive you if you're not willing to forgive your fellow man. I know that's the point of the parable. But I'd like for us to focus on the first half of the parable. I want us to focus upon the servant that owed his master so much. Matthew 18 and verse 24, "The king began to settle his accounts. One was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. And I know you have heard preachers try to explain how much that is. It's a lot. You got to get way up into the multiple millions of dollars and maybe beyond that. It was a sum. Bottom line is, it was a sum that this guy, if he lived five lifetimes, would never be able to repay. It wasn't going to happen. And so what does he do? Well, the king says, "You can't pay me? Fine. I will sell you. I will sell your wife. I will sell your children. I will sell everything you've got. And we'll call that even. That will settle the score. And this servant said, no, no. And he begins to plead with his master, with the king. He says, if you will be patient with me, I will pay you everything. Now again, they both knew. He and the king both knew that wasn't going to happen. So what did the guy do? What did he do? He threw himself on the mercy of the king. He knew he was between the rock and the hard place. He knew he was in a position that he couldn't possibly get out of by his own efforts. Nothing he could do was going to fix this situation. And he said, please, just be patient with me. He cast himself on the mercy of the king. And the master of that servant was moved with compassion and released him and forgave him the debt. Sometimes we need to have that attitude. When we know there's nothing we can do to fix it. When we know we're in a situation that we cannot control. When it is totally out of our control. And the situation just seems totally hopeless. Why not just cast ourselves on the mercy of the one who loves us? Why not just trust the one who loves us, who has us in the palm of his hand, cast it all on him? It was Peter in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 7 who writes, cast all of your care upon him because he cares for you. He does. But you've got to trust him. You've got to trust him in this thing. And when Moses told the children of Israel to stand still or to stand firm, he was telling them not only to be steadfast, hold your ground. He was telling them not only to trust God in this thing. He was telling them to have courage as well. He went on to say, do not fear. Do not fear, but stand firm. Now that's all the more poignant when you realize the fact that these were not warriors. 600,000 men, that's a pretty good force. But what had they been doing all their lives? They had been slaves. They had been servants. They had not been trained in warfare. If they had any weapons at all, they didn't know how to use them. And here you have the trained Egyptian army. The chariots, the foot soldiers coming after them. Red Sea on one side, trained military force on the other side. And Moses is telling them, you need to have courage. Do not fear. It's been said that courage is really not the absence of fear. It's the ability to control that fear. But however you want to word it, Moses was telling them, you stand strong and you have a strong heart. You stay courageous in this thing. Now again, not because they were strong, because they weren't. But who was? This ties in with the previous point. Why they needed to trust God. Because while they did not have the strength, God did. True for you and me today, by the way. We may not have the strength to get out of every situation we may find ourselves in, but God does. It's very much like the situation with David and Goliath. We have used this illustration many times from this pulpit, but the idea is the reason little David, you know, the young man, shepherd boy, not a trained soldier at all, had no fear. He had courage when he went up against Goliath, the 9-foot Philistine warrior. The reason that David was able to go up against the man is because David trusted God. It's not because David knew he had the strength, but the one that he trusted did. And he trusted that God would save him, that God would see him through it. And brethren, that is exactly the attitude of mind that you and I need to have. When Paul wrote some of his final words in the book of 2 Timothy, he was writing to an evangelist who was going to need courage in the course of his work. He told him, this is 2 Timothy chapter 1 and in verse 7, that God has not given us a spirit of fear. He has given us a spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. We have not been given a spirit of fear. If you're a Christian, you should not have a spirit of fear, even when you're between the rock and the hard place. Even when you're in that situation that you find to be inescapable, no reason to fear, have courage, trust God, stand your ground. It's exactly what Moses was telling the people of Israel. And brethren, it's exactly what God would have you and me to do today. Now, I know the pushback that I would get from some people, even Christians. They will say, well, preacher, yeah, God parted the waters of the Red Sea for them, but the age of miracles is past, and He's not going to part the waters for me. And there's a sense in which you're right about that. He's not going to part the waters. He's not even going to let you walk on top of the water like He did with Peter. That's not how God works today. But that does not mean that God will not make a way for you. God does not work miraculously today. That doesn't mean God's not working. God does work providentially. The book of Hebrews tells us that His angels are sent to minister, to serve those who are heirs of salvation. That's you and me. And I don't know how all they serve. I don't know how all they work. But I know that they do, because the book of Hebrews says that they do. And I know that God is fully capable of helping us through the most difficult situations of life if we will stand firm, if we will trust Him, and if we will maintain courage. He may not provide us all that we want, and He may not provide us what we want when we want it, on our timetable. He may not do that. But He will always provide us what we need, and He will provide that in time. We've got to believe that. And if you're asking the question, preacher, I'm not sure I can do that. Let me assure you, you can. Not from your own strength, by the grace of God, you really can do this. You have been listening to a recent sermon presented to the Downtown Church of Christ in Rogers, Arkansas, entitled Stand Still. We all find ourselves in situations from time to time when we are powerless to do anything about our situation, when we are caught between that rock and hard place. And like the people of Israel, we have nowhere else to go. It is especially important at times like these that we learn to stand still and to give it all over to God. If we at the Downtown Church can help you to turn your life over to God, we encourage you to reach out and contact us. We are here to serve. And once again, remember that the Downtown Church meets every Sunday morning for Bible classes at 9:30, and we have Bible classes for all ages. Our regular assemblies on Sundays are at 10:30 on Sunday mornings and at 5 o'clock on Sunday evenings. And we would encourage you to come and visit with us anytime that you can. Our prayer continues to be that everyone listening to this program will be safe, both physically and spiritually. Once again, thank you for joining us this morning. And remember this week to let the Bible speak. Oh.